nobody else is to do it, so he asked me to do it. Just about right. The senator from the 15th. You want to do it? The hour of recess having expired, the Senate is back in session. We are on the order of the Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senator of the Order of Business of Reports of Standing Committees.
Reports of Standing Committees. Senator from the 23rd.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics has a report.
Send the report forward. Madam Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 682, begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully, Senator Dempsey, Chairman.
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, the informal calendar, Senate Bill 439.
Senate Bill for Perfection, the informal calendar, Senator from Stoddard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 439 with the Senate Committee substitute be brought before the body for perfection.
The Senator from Stoddard has moved that Senate Bill 439 with the Senate Committee substitute be brought before the body for perfection. As many as are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body. The senator from the 15th has the floor. 13th, I'm sorry. Senator from the 13th has the floor. Senator from the 13th.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I have an amendment to the substitute amendment.
Send your amendment forward.
I think if the Secretary of Senate looks, research did SSA, it should be SA to SSA. If you could change that for me. The amendment has not been distributed, so I ask we don't close on it until it has been distributed.
Okay, we will not close on the amendment until it has been distributed.
I move for the adoption of the amendment to the substitute amendment.
Senator, would you care to explain your amendment?
Yes, I will. Explain the amendment. What this does is the original amendment I had, which was substituted by the senator from the 11th, dealt with required reporting. This is something that a lot of the contractors had brought in the discussions, which was absent of the original Senate substitute brought by the senator from Stoddard. So basically, this amendment cleans up. And through the last few weeks, I have worked on it. Mr. President, if I could inquire the senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, I want to go over a few things because you have been in discussions along with the senator, besides the senator from Stoddard, the senator from Jefferson, and the senator from 11th. And sometimes when we bring this issue of prevailing wage up, we tend to bring the issue of unions and collective bargaining wage rates.
Yes.
Throughout those meetings, was there any labor officials in those meetings, or was it just all contractors dealing with the issue?
I think mostly just contractors. If there were labor officials, I wasn't really aware of who they were.
Okay. A lot of them, the first meeting we had in the Senate lounge, we had a lot of different contractor associations from the state, those representing both, you call them union, I call them signatory, and non-union associations. You had associations that were statewide associations. You had associations that were from Kansas City. You had associations from St. Louis. Then you had craft associations as well.
Right.
In the tone of that meeting, a majority of the contractor associations said if you're going to change something, you should deal with the reporting issue. That was in the forefront of all the discussions when we were in the Senate lounge, not by us senators that continue to try to bring this issue up, but by those contracting associations. Would that be an accurate statement?
I think that was pretty much their position that they felt would be helpful in determining prevailing wage. And I think during those discussions, I pointed out that a lot of my guys, for one reason or another, were not reporting. And such a small number of outstate Missouri was reporting. We were looking at how do we change that issue? How do we bring that forward? Our fear, or my fear, was that there are some projects sitting there that this whole unknown to a lot of the contractors that they weren't moving forward and was acting as a deterrent to job creation and getting some things done that possibly had the opportunity to maybe move forward if there was a better understanding or an easier way to report. And I know we've talked about quite a few different ways of reporting and requiring mandatory, making it easier. I think the senator from Jefferson has some ideas on online reporting, and some of those issues were been brought up and talked about.
They were discussed, and then I believe, I remember the one contractor from the Mechanical Contractors Association stood up and basically said, this is how we compete, this is our livelihood, be careful what you do with this law, because this could be detrimental to our industry. Several contractors had mentioned that as well. I'm not putting words in your mouth, am I?
That was a concern that they had, and I think the majority of those contractors represented Jackson County surrounding area, St. Louis County surrounding area, and you know, I think all of us said, you know, prevailing wage laws as written seem to work well in those areas. It was the outstate area that a lot of us had concerns about.
Right. But one of the things that kept being brought up throughout this entire process is I believe 68% of the wage rates dealing with the 20-something different OCC titles in the 114 counties plus the city of St. Louis, that no wage rates were being turned in.
That's right. A huge percentage.
And one of the issues that you brought up with your contractor was that my contractors don't want to turn in because they're going to get harassed. So the second meeting that we had, we brought in the Department of Labor to discuss that, and the Department of Labor said that does not happen. They came in. Am I accurate when we met down in Senate Committee Hearing Room 1?
That was pretty much what they maintained, that, and there were some figures that supported some of their claims. And, you know, then I go back home and I don't really get that feeling from talking with these folks, you know, that are smaller, dealing in smaller projects and basically at this point not doing public projects. And so somewhere there's a disconnect. I don't know if it goes back years ago or what the situation is. And, you know, I just want everybody to get in the game because I think there are some things that can be done in Worth County and Dent County and, you know, smaller counties that have lesser budgets. I think there's some projects sitting there that somehow we need to move forward. And, you know, I've learned a lot through this process. And I guess I still want to know, how do I get my guys into the bidding process?
Yeah, so that's one of the issues that we brought up through these meetings with the contractors. And I think the senator from Stoddard said after we had the first meeting, can we narrow it down a little bit? Because the second meeting, what we dealt with was the Department of Labor to get a grasp and answer the questions. I think some of the questions were answered that the senator from Jasper was not aware, but the Department of Labor Standards, was actually assisting a school district down in Jasper County dealing with an unscrupulous contractor. And when I'm going to inquire of him a little bit in a little later as well, but actually offered to house the Department of Labor Standards to assist them in enforcing, because they had a very non-productive contractor, let's say that way. So they were kind of educating us. So then we go to the third meeting. I believe a group of us senators had a meeting also in the senator from Stoddard's office, and then we had a meeting in the back, which we had on a Monday, and we narrowed it down further that the ABC was represented by Mr. Paddock at the meeting. I had requested somebody from the electrical contractors. We all agreed with somebody that was comfortable with the issue. We in turn brought a lady that owns a contracting company from St. Louis but does work throughout the entire state, as well as someone from Kansas City. And once again, the issue of reporting was brought up again.
Right.
So in all of our meetings and in the process of getting us to sit down and discuss mandatory reporting, which I would like to add is not something that I have promoted. Because if you're dealing with the union non-union issue, and 70% is a collective bargaining wage rate, if you force more reporting, there's going to be less collective bargaining rates because people are going to start submitting their hours, and they're going to be those different hours. So that is a very big step into trying to come to a compromise. All meetings requested some type of mandatory reporting. I think the House of Representatives has a bill which basically wants the county commissioners to collect the wage rates and send them up to the Department of Labor. But we can agree that there is a problem with reporting. There was a discussion that some of the contractors feel they are going to be harassed if they report. We brought in the department. They turned and said, we haven't done that. We've been too busy dealing with these other issues. That's false. We also had the senator from Jefferson bring up reports out of 10 years, out of all these OCC titles and out of all these problems, that there had only been about 10 objections, and most of them were settled. So it seems the ones that had problems worked it out. So we've created this mountain. And in these meetings that we're trying to get everyone to sit down and work together and come up with some constructive solutions, with reporting being one of them, I don't see reporting in the senator from Stoddard's issue. In the senator from Stoddard's bill is what he wants in the bill. There is nothing about reporting. And there is no argument that says the senator from Jefferson, the senator from the 11th, and myself have tried to sit down and come to some consensus. Yeah. So in fairness to my discussion with you, I'd like to know, do you think the three senators that could be considered on the other side sat down and did their due diligence and participated in the process?
Well, I think that, you know, in this process and, in the Senate, I think you guys have offered some amendments today that some of them are very good amendments that we'll consider. I think we'll have amendments coming forward. And hopefully at the end of the discussion, there's something, because I feel like right now nobody's really felt that we've hit that target that does what maybe both sides want to do. And, one of our contentions has been the mode method of reporting, and whether or not, our side feels like that's...
Now there you're going on sides.
Do what?
You're going on sides. Our side feels...
Yeah, well, I mean, different groups and on different sides of the discussion. I'm not, I think the goal is, how do we get more people reporting wages? So it because, according to the law, that would reflect more accurately in the counties that aren't reporting what the wage rate is, and would, in the long term, hopefully help with some of their public projects. And that's the goal, and how we get to that.
Right.
Yeah.
What major issues have you handled in the Missouri Senate this year? I have supported all of them.
Yeah, you have. You've been very good.
Just give me one example of one issue you've handled. Was it, well, the rabies issue is one. Is there an industry issue that you handled?
I have not.
Because when you handle a bill on the floor, don't you try to bring all the interested parties in?
I do.
That the law affects?
Yeah. Hopefully.
Try to get some of them to agree and say, sit down, let's work something out.
Right.
Okay. I got just a few letters I want to mention so that, because as Democrats, it's always that stigma that we are anti-business and Republicans are pro-business. Democrats like to fight for the employees. Republicans like to fight for the business. I've always been in a belief that if businesses aren't making money, they can't employ people.
Right.
So
I agree.
I tend to listen to them, and throughout my career, I have handled legislation for major corporations. In fact, when I was chairman of the House Labor Committee in the House, I didn't handle any collective bargaining for public employees or any of those issues. I always handled issues that were pertaining to the business community. One of the first bills I passed, the senator from Jefferson's father was in the Senate. He handled it in the Senate, was prompt pay. A lot of these contractors couldn't get their final payment and were going broke. I helped not just those union contractors, I helped those non-union contractors get the money they deserved. And what I did in that piece of legislation with the senator, former senator from Jefferson, is we put up to 18% interest if they won a judgment. And that is to entice the customer, if the contractor has fulfilled his punch list, to pay promptly.
I agree.
Because a lot of contractors were going broke.
Yeah.
Then in the latter part of my tenure, I pushed a retainage issue. They keep so much money at the end of the job, too. It's similar to prompt pay, but it's retainage. We passed that. I had to chuckle. I was in a Senate committee. I think the senator from the 3rd, St. Francis, is handling the bill to try to clean up some issues because the subcontractors down the food chain that complete their job at the early stages of a construction site have to wait possibly 2 or 3 years to get, like, their end deposit,
right?
And they've completed and they've already paid the wage rates and the benefits. So that's another issue I handled. So I always felt, and I used to have labor people come to me all the time, we want collective bargaining for public employees. I said, listen, it's not going to pass. I'd rather pass something that we can pass that helps instead of beating our heads against the wall with collective bargaining. And I'll tell you, there was a Teamster lobbyist at the time, I think he has passed, but he used to come into my office and do that finger pointing to me, and then I'd go back and people would contact me, you're anti-labor, you won't push collective bargaining. I says, because it won't pass.
Yeah.
I want to do productive things. I don't like to waste my time up here. I could be doing more productive things like being at my daughter's soccer game tonight than standing here all night and doing something that's completely non-productive. So my Irish gets up, Senator, when I have to do things that are totally unproductive, when I have applied myself sincerely into trying to come up with a solution, and because I am one of 8 of a minority when it comes to this issue, I don't know anything. I know absolutely nothing. Because the individual we're listening to is an individual who got caught a year ago at an armory in Springfield with illegals. That is who we're listening to in these meetings. We're not listening to the Plumbing Industry Council. It's a trade association representing 155 plumbing and mechanical contractors located in the eastern half of Missouri, not just St. Louis, who hire over 1,500 employees plus 600 office and managerial staff. And in their letter, they state prevailing wage laws ensure local labor standards cannot be artificially depressed by competition for state-funded construction projects. Now, I'm just not holding you up, but I've been waiting my turn to speak.
Right.
And you're one of the people I'm speaking with. We have the utmost respect for you, so don't think I'm picking on you.
I'm good.
All right. Contractors no longer compete on the basis of who can best train, best equip, and best manage a construction crew. Instead, they compete on the basis of who can find the cheapest workers either locally or through importing labor from elsewhere. This puts the quality of construction at risk. It also may lead to substantial cost overruns. Now, the reason people say they don't do it in the private sector, why do we do it in the public sector? Well, in the public sector, in our statutes dealing with contracting, we state that you have to go with the lowest, best bid.
Right.
But we do not define in our state statutes what is best. But we all know what lowest is, but we really don't have it. So all these public entities have to go with the lowest bid. So these contractors want to be left on a level playing field. Those organizations are persons who are attempting to change or repeal prevailing wage or trying to gain an unfair advantage for out-of-state and or dishonest contractors by ensuring the playing field is no longer level. That's from the Plumbing Industry Council, Executive Vice President Ray Hefner. I got a letter from SMACMA. That's a group that represents 44 contractors who design, build, service, and install heating and air conditioning, ventilation, sheet metal systems for residential, commercial, industrial, and institutional applications. 1,800 trained employees and several hundred management. They say the same thing. Don't repeal or weaken the prevailing wage. I have a letter from the St. Louis chapter, National Electrical Contractors Association. They represent 190 electrical contractors and communication contractors. Senator, do you know where one of their bigger contractors is working right now? And they're located in St. Louis, but you know where they're working?
Probably in Afghanistan or overseas.
No. They're Joplin. Working in Joplin.
Okay.
They're building the hospital. Okay? Now, that's not a public works. That's Mercy Hospital.
Right.
But Mercy Hospital is private. They said, we want this built right. We want guarantee electric down there. Now, they pay that so-called collective bargaining wage rate down in Joplin. The biggest project down in Joplin for the next year is going to be the building of Mercy Hospital.
Right.
They're bringing in these big contractors from St. Louis that they have dealt with in St. Louis because there's Mercy Hospitals in St. Louis. They're going to set that wage rate for the next 3 years down in Jasper County. And those are the wage rates so that those contractors can also compete and do work down there. But in their letter, also I just wanted to mention that contractors represented by NECA performed between 5 million and 25 million hours of electrical work and communication construction work in Missouri annually. The purpose of this letter is to communicate the unanimous opposition from contractors represented by our association to proposals to amend the Missouri prevailing wage law. Senator, why I bring this up is because we have businesses that the Republicans are supposed to be sticking up for. Write me letters saying, please stop any repeals of the prevailing wage law. If you're going to do anything like they told you, let's do something with reporting, like I'm doing with my amendment. But, Senator, I'm not going to make you stand the entire evening. I wanted to share with everyone, because you have a lot of respect, that through this process of negotiations and sitting down and working things out, reporting has been the biggest issue that has been brought forth by a majority of the contractors present. I have just read several letters, and I have more, that will tell you a lot of these contractors throughout the state that are taxpaying citizens, taxpaying companies that provide health and welfare benefits and pension benefits wanted to be left alone.
Right.
And we're not listening to them. And it's very frustrating at this hour, this late at night, and we're going to go all night until your caucus wants to do something deliberate that'll be probably very devastating. But until we want to talk about the issues and sit in a room and compromise and work on an issue that the industry has said, let's do, where do I go?
Yeah. And I understand what you're bringing forward. And then you have to understand that since I've been elected, I served in the House 2 years and then I've been over here. There's rarely a group meeting that I have back home that someone doesn't come up and start talking about prevailing wage, and I get into discussion. I'm I'm more educated now than I've been in the past about, you know, kind of how this thing works. And they are very concerned. And it's not just Republican. And, you know, and I don't think this is a Republican-Democrat issue. I think that both sides of the aisle at this stage in Missouri's economy, we want jobs. We want to get some things
moving. I'm with you,
forward.
Senator. I'm you right know, behind you. Tell me what I can do.
Yeah, and I don't care how we do it. I just want to do it. And you know, well, I do care how we do it. I want it to be done legally, properly, and whatever.
In fairness to us, you can't blame us Democrats for stopping the economic development bill special session that wasted $200,000 of taxpayer money and accomplished absolutely nothing. I'm going to mention that several times tonight, too.
I understand.
You know, on that issue, can I tell you an issue on that that I have told the senator from Stoddard several times? You want to know why I am so bitter on that issue? There used to be a rule in the Missouri Senate that when you come into someone's district and deal with legislation pertaining to their district, that you contact that senator. The property that that proposal affected was in the senator from the 14th and the senator from the 13th district. Neither one of us was contacted throughout the summer. And let me add to this to you, Senator. I requested to participate in that, and I was excluded. Now, how would you feel when you talk about economic development and you represent the area and they don't even ask you to come participate?
Well, I probably can't really tell you right here on the floor how I would feel.
Well, you'd be like me, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I'd probably be a lot worse. You're more of a statesman than I am, probably. So.
Oh, yeah. You're going to see the non-statesman of it tonight, probably.
But no, I you know, and my goal in kicking this hornet's nest or opening this can of worms is not to to be a problem to anyone. It just concerns me when I see some projects that are going forward in my area, and you know, I talk to some of my local guys, even some of my local union guys, and they're not working on that, and it's like, well, none of our local contractors got a bid on that issue, and so that really concerns me. In other words, no, I don't want it to be exclusive to Phelps County residents, never. I mean, you know, because then that leads to another whole set of problems. But, you know, we had a pretty sizable project that was done, and it was a great, great job, no problem. And I didn't have very many of my guys working on that, you know, union or non-union, and that did concern me a little bit. And I did not delve into the contracts, you know, I did not. I should have maybe if I had that concern. But, you know, I'm at the point that, you know, I know of three or four projects that, you know, and honestly, these have been commissioners that's brought this to me and said, you know, can you please do something with prevailing wage? We need to build this little shed. Don't cost a lot of money. And I'm like, you know, if it don't cost a lot of money, then what's the big deal, you know? And you know, I get hit on these issues at home.
I understand.
Not just from one party.
Sincerely understand the frustration.
Yeah.
I understand, and I'll say it on this floor, 68% being determined by collective bargaining agreement. That's why it's not going to make the people in the labor movement happy that I say mandatory reporting. The first thing they're going to say is, oh, my God, we were getting 70% without having to do anything. What are you making us work for now?
Right.
But I'm willing to make that stretch.
Right.
I'm willing to stand up to them and say, you're big boys, you're big girls. Report your hours just like everyone else.
And
go that process. And then if you remember in the back room, the head of the Department of Labor said, I got an idea for you. State of Maryland just created an easier way to report hours.
Yeah.
And this could probably be your solution and see how that works for a year. We're getting good reports of how it's working in the state of Maryland. So how often do we see what other states do when we have issues and we sit there and we listen to them and we go that way? So there's another step we could take, and I think the senator from Jefferson has that amendment.
He does, yeah.
Make it really simple to report the hours. Really, really simple. And then we get a true determination. Now, I'm going to be gone. Senator from the 11th is going to be gone. So we're not going to hold this up, and the senator from Stoddard will be gone. So all you individuals that are still here are going to sit back in 2 years and say, you know, this thing's working, or you're going to say, no, it isn't working, let's do this.
Right.
But the reason I have inquired of you, and you're my buddy, so I'm not going to make you stand up, is I wanted somebody that maybe your side of the aisle would listen to, hear about the process we went through the meetings, and how we brought people in that were in the industry
right.
that were concerned. And aren't we supposed to listen to the industry when we deal with these issues, Senator?
Oh, no.
We brought them in, and not one of the issues the industry pushed is what came out. The issue that is in that bill is what one contractor said. And here I just listened to you about 400 contractors saying, don't do anything.
Right.
So that's all, Senator. You've been a joy to work with, and I still agree with you 1,000% of the time, and hopefully after tonight with an open mind,
right.
I can influence you to come over this side, because I had to listen to the senator from Stoddard for 2 hours manipulate the conversation. Now I'm going to bring out some of the facts in the conversation.
And I appreciate that, and I think that's why we're all here, is through the amendment process. You know, we saw earlier in the day an issue that didn't look like it was going to go anywhere, and through amendments and discussion, I think we got a pretty good bill. And, you know, at the end of the day, at the end of this discussion, hopefully 2 years from now, we're going to say, you know, we've got, there's only 10% of the counties that aren't reporting, or, you know, something of that nature. And that's probably too low a number. But hopefully we get more people involved in the process. So, yeah, I've always said, if you want to affect anything, you have to have a seat at the table. And if you're not sitting at the table, which a lot of the contractors are not, then you're going to get what is determined to be your medicine.
But Senator, we brought contractors to sit at the table.
And I agree.
And guess what? Nobody wanted to listen to them. And I have to try to get through to enough of my colleagues to say, just because he's the pro tem,
right.
he was in the meetings, he don't know it all.
Yeah.
Now, he might know more than me when it comes to law. And on that issue, I always ask him when we're joking, why is it so hard you complain about us construction workers making this much in St. Louis and this much down in your area, but if you're a judge or a circuit judge, you make the same as a circuit
Everybody.
Judge or judge in St. Louis. Why is it the lawyers and the judges always get treated better than us working people? Why is that?
They write the law.
Yes. Well, the senator from Lewis kind of, he didn't know it, but he kind of insulted me when I was talking to him about the teacher's minimum pay, and I asked him, why are you worried about the teachers and not the construction workers? And he said, because, well, they have college degrees. You know, Senator, I'm a construction worker, and I have a college degree. Yeah. That's kind of insulting.
Yeah.
You know? So, Senator, it's been a complete joy talking with you. I just did want to share with everyone, you sat in those meetings just like the senator from the 11th and
the
senator from Jefferson, and you have also said that you got to be at the table. What I'm trying to make sure everyone is aware of, there's a lot of contractors that were at that table whose voice is not being heard.
Right.
Okay?
And, you know, and one of the contractors made a comment, and I agree with him. He was the gentleman from Kansas City, and I probably can't pronounce his name right, but he said, I'm tired of coming down here on this issue. And, you know, and I'm relatively new to this issue, not, I mean, in the legislative end of it. I've heard about it, you know, all my life at home. And a lot of the concerns that I hear deal with the Davis-Bacon Act because of Fort Leonard Wood, and that's a different ball game than what we're talking about here. But, you know, I do hope that through the amendment process and discussion process that we find a way to address everyone's concerns.
Senator, for us to find a way that'll be effective.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
For us to find a way to be effective, we got to break away from this partisan division. We got to step aside from doing a 10-hour debate on the issue and listen to everybody that's at the table. For us to do that, for it to go to the House and then to the governor, to actually become law, to sit here and say on the floor, we did something. Wow. That's what you got to do.
till we are willing to do this, this is just a waste of time.
You know, there's some legislation that we do up here that are very, very important and affects a lot of people and does affect people's ability to make a living. There's some legislation we do that's not so important, but maybe it's a constituent issue that affects a smaller number, and we try to push that idea for them to get that done. But this is something that is a big issue, and at a time when we really do need to stimulate the economy in our state, put people back to work, get manufacturing back here, and I think at the end of the day, everyone is devoted to that end. Otherwise, we shouldn't probably be here.
I'm going to tell you a little quick story before I leave you go. Tomorrow, that I found out yesterday that I asked they not do this, but my family is coming up tomorrow. I am one of seven. Did you know I am one of seven?
I did not know that.
Do you know I suffer from middle child syndrome?
I can see that.
I am number four of number seven. All seven of us have college degrees. Five of the seven are construction electricians. Two of the five that are electricians are also electrical engineers. And then my sister's a nurse. My mother was a teamster. She drove a forklift in a warehouse. What she would do is, my mom, God rest her soul, she'd drive the forklift in the skids and load the pharmaceutical things for Schnucks because they had their warehouse on the Rock Road. My father worked 42 years as a construction electrician, first as a lineman, then as a residential wireman, then as a commercial wireman. Some of the big jobs he ran was the Edward Jones Dome and the Scott Trade Center, GM plant. He did all the temperature control on that. 42 years, he raised seven kids. All seven have college degrees. We always had health care. None of us took any student loans at the cost of the government. We didn't take any Medicaid dollars or Medicaid dollars to help us because we always had insurance. He raised those seven kids, seven college degrees, no public assistance, and he's 75 years old and he got to retire with dignity. He's got a pension. You know those things everyone's talking about, these defined benefit plans, these pensions? He's got one. And guess what? Through his career as a union construction electrician, the subpay is paid by the health and welfare of the local. That's how we are with these unions. So not Medicare pays for all of his bills. So I get tired, and I think Governor Nixon said it best when we had this rally the other day. You get tired of getting attacked for doing what's right. In defending somebody to make a good living with benefits and to have a pension that don't cost the taxpayer nothing. And besides us not costing the taxpayer anything for our college degrees, the five of us that are electricians went through the Joint National Electrical, JATC, Joint Apprenticeship Training Center, National Electrical Contractors Association. Do you know how much that cost the taxpayers for us all to get the education?
Nothing.
Not a dime. And I just want to make sure the senator first don't go too far because he's next. So, but I wanted to share that with you because I do get tired of us talking. And what I'm going to talk so you, when you go to your office, you can hear, is we're going to talk about child care and we're going to talk about Medicaid costs in the state and how that keeps going up and up. And if we keep pushing the bar down of what people make and we don't reward these contractors to pay health and welfare benefits,
right,
we're going to make the demand on government services more. So thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the 13th.
I inquire the senator from the 1st.
Senator from the 1st, do you yield?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
You know, Senator, I was hoping that you'd let me inquire of you.
No, I'm not giving up the floor for a while.
Because then I could maybe take control of the conversation or, ask you a few questions or maybe delve into some different interesting things that might be on my mind. You have some things that you want to talk to me about?
No, why don't you start?
You mind if I start?
No, I actually always enjoy your conversations. I think since we first met in 2002 on the freshman tour,
that's
we
right.
hit it off right away, I think.
We did, because...
You still didn't like the judges back
then either. You were my mentor
either.
At that time. No, yeah, well, that's true. But you were my mentor at that time in that all your background in your budget work and chairman is, of budget in the House, and I was intrigued by that because that's always, you know, been my first love. But, you know, as we discuss this issue, it reminds me of the first time that I ran for the House. And, well, I shouldn't say that, because that was in 94 and 96 when I lost twice to probably an old friend of yours, Joe Treadway, down in,
oh,
in the Lehigh area.
Oh, I thought the first time you ran was 2002. I learned something new today.
I ran against Joe twice in 94 and 96. But when I ran in
hey,
in,
you didn't quit either.
What's that?
You didn't quit.
I didn't. Now, I put it on the back burner for a little while, but I didn't quit. But when I ran in 2002... I knocked on 10,000 doors in that House district. And I kept hearing a recurring theme coming from many of those doors. And it really didn't click until I was elected, or I was running for my second term in the House. And I started really looking into some issues that were important to my constituents. And I've said it many times on this floor, Senator, that there are two things that affect my vote on any issue on this floor. Number one is the Constitution. And number two is what my constituents think and communicate to me. Because we serve in a republic. And in that republic, we're elected to represent our constituents. And I made a commitment in 2004 that I would be with my constituents on three issues that were important to labor. Right to work, the prevailing wage, PLAs. And I haven't changed my position on those issues in all the years that I've served in the House since then and in the Senate. I've been consistent. My voting record has been consistent. Now, I wanted to get that out of the way.
I think there was a Democratic senator that came down and endorsed a Republican state rep that second time.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And I appreciate that. The other night, I watched for the maybe third or fourth time the movie Amazing Grace. Have you ever seen that movie? Amazing Grace?
I may have.
It's the story, it's a true story of William Wilberforce. And Wilberforce was a politician, and he served in the Parliament in England. And for 20 years straight, he introduced the bill to abolish slavery in England. And for 19 years in a row, he left dejected because he failed every year. But he continued in his quest to abolish slavery in England. And I looked at that movie, and I thought to myself, it's hard to pass laws. It's difficult. And even when what your goal is, even when you have a righteous goal, it doesn't mean that the process is going to be easy. And I think about what we do in this Senate day in and day out, year in and year out, in being about the people's business and passing laws that affect every person in this state. And I think about the different debates that we have. And a lot of our colleagues get very frustrated with the process. But it made me think about another movie. I'm kind of a movie buff, but it made me think
I am
of,
too.
Yeah, it made me think of another movie that I really, really enjoyed, and that was Mr. Smith
Goes to Washington with Jimmy Stewart.
Right, yeah. Jimmy Stewart.
I watched that on the second date with my wife. I never had seen it before. And our second date stayed out late. The first having 12-ounce curls. So the second date, we went to her apartment. We watched it. She just said, you would like this movie. She could not believe I had never seen it. Every yeah. time that's on the TCM, I always watch it. Go ahead.
But what strikes me about that movie and the way that was handled is it reminded me of the two times that I saw in this body where a lone senator had to stand by himself and stand until he could stand no more. And, you know, when that senator collapsed, and we had the senator from Howell, and I saw the senator from the 8th, the former senator from the 8th, go through that process, that's the way the process works, okay? If you've got one senator that wants to stand against an issue for as long as he can stand or she can stand, then that's part of the process, okay? And sooner or later, the body, if it's just that one senator, will be able to outlast that one senator, okay? But the fact of the matter is, with the way this body operates, is that if you have two senators, or three senators, or four senators, or five senators, then as you mentioned a little earlier, all you're doing is wasting the people's time. Because this system is set up so that if you have five senators that believe it's not the time to pass this bill into law, then maybe it's next year. Or maybe it's the year after that. Or maybe it's the year after that. The problem that we have that is the fruit of term limits, more bad fruit of term limits, is we've all become very impatient. We believe that we've got to pass the law now, that the world is going to come to an end if we don't change this law, that the people will not be able to seek out justice if we don't pass this law today. Well, I'm here to tell you, Senator, if there are five senators in this body that say we're not passing the law today or tomorrow or the next day or next week, it's not going to pass. And you know what? That's good for the people. Because tomorrow it might be a different issue that's important to people that are on a different side of any given bill. So what this process is built to do is not only slow it down, but stop it. So that, like you said, Senator, we can all get in a room, everybody that has a vested interest in this issue, and on behalf of the people, we can come to a compromise. That's not a dirty word.
No, not at all. And that's why I brought the issue up with the senator from Phelps. A group of us that met on this issue kept meeting on the issue. And every time our issue came up, well, we'll give you this for that. No, you don't realize. This is a big give here, and see how it works. Nothing against the senator from Stoddard, but one of the meetings we had was on a Monday. I drove down. The senator was busy. He wasn't there yet, and his staff said, well, let's start the meeting. And the senator from the 11th said, no, we'll wait for the senator. Senators will discuss the issue with senators. Not staff, but right. Senators. We'll discuss the issue with senators. So we just sat there patiently. And then the senator left and came back and said, do we have a compromise? We said, well, we got these issues. We got these contractors. We didn't meet. 3 weeks later, the bill came up. We did a filibuster, I guess. And then this has been brought to our attention that this is the issue of most importance. Not Turner fix. Started getting a little ways with that last night. Not the foundation formula. No, we don't need to deal with that one, even though that's pretty volatile because both those issues deal with the education and the highest expenditure, besides, of course, social services, but the big expenditure of over $3 billion for public education so that all kids can receive a public education. That issue, as the senator from Johnson said, it's good we're finally talking about this issue. We have brought the issue of education up. We went 4 or 5 hours last night. I actually seen movement. You had an amendment. We discussed it with the senator from the 7th. Now, senator from 7th said, if I don't get my way, I'm not going to let nothing pass. It's like, oh, okay. So then we adjourned soon after that. But here, when I get up on the floor to talk about an issue that I've been trying to get the entire industry in the same room, and I have isolated organized labor. Oh, I got calls. Why aren't we included? It's an industry issue. Let's get the contractors. Let's get the business people in the room and let them hash it out. Because I'm so tired of the issue being it's organized labor against these small contractors. Let's talk about a time you and I had, two times that we had. The one, we had a very, very nice ride, and the senator from the 14th joined us. But we went to see the construction of a power plant. And I remember I was sitting by you, and we first went in seeing how Peabody digs coal in southwestern Illinois, which was very interesting. Then we got on the bus. And I always had a great relationship with you, and we're going to talk about the story right after the elections and you visiting with contractors and seeing apprenticeship schools. And I've always been able to pick up that phone and call you and try to impress upon you, would you meet with these individuals? You've always said anytime, Senator. But we're in this bus, and we're driving around this power plant, which is in construction. It's almost complete, I think. And some of our co-ops are part of the construction of that facility because we're too inept to debate energy policy on the Senate floor. So some of our co-ops are partnered in over there, and we do this presentation, but we're in that van, and we're driving around. And talked about the payroll the last 18 months. The gentleman said the construction payroll was over $1 billion. Remember that? $1 billion. I was like, wow. And what you said, I still remember, as clear as yesterday, you said, why can't we have one of these in Missouri? Because you have Merrimack Power Plant.
Right.
Which is coming to an end of its life, and we have to deal with that energy issue. But you sat there and said, why can't Missouri do something like this? And then when we find out in the presentation that the co-ops that reside in Missouri and some of the municipals are going to be purchasing power from this, so we're letting the train by. Now, there's an issue. Electric energy. Being the manufacturer of power in the Midwest. And we have several senators that stop us from even discussing the issue. But of course, we got to deal with prevailing wage in this one issue. But we can't deal with any of those issues. Why can't we discuss something of such magnitude of employment? Whenever you have a depression or a recession and government's going to spend money, isn't it best we spend it in infrastructure? That's just not roads and bridges. It's energy. Investing, that's what they did in the 30s, besides the war bringing us out, is all the public expenditures investing in infrastructure. A power plant down at Lake of the Ozarks that is still used today. Why aren't we doing any of that in public policy, Senator?
Well, those are the discussions we should be having, Senator.
Well, in the process of a bill becomes a law, you remember when you were a kid, I'm just a bill on Capitol Hill. I'm just a bill on Capitol Hill. A bill becomes a law. It has to pass the House, and it has to pass the Senate. And then it has to get signed by the governor. Okay? And if the governor vetoes it, then it comes back to the House, and it comes back to the Senate, and they have to get two-thirds of the votes to override the governor. Senator, how many bills are we going to keep passing that either get vetoed or cannot pass the other chamber and wasting our time when we could be debating energy policy in the state of Missouri, public education in the state of Missouri?
Tax policy.
Tax credit reform and tax policy. Senator, why can't we be doing some of that? I mean,
right.
I'm not in the majority. I don't have input. And I have quit trying to give input. If I was the leader, sure, I have some ideas of how I would do it, but I'm in the minority. I'm never going to have that chance. So why can't we discuss that? Why why are we keep pedaling our bicycle with our back wheel propped up, debating issues that aren't going nowhere because no one can come to a conclusion on it? Now, when we pass something and business don't like it, don't you think these contractors that are writing letters adamantly opposed are going to be ringing the phone off the hook in the governor's office, veto it? Don't you think these contractors are going to be contacting not just the Democrats, but the Republicans and saying we're business people? We had, in one of our meetings, the owner of Corrigan Mechanical, and he was kind of funny. He stood up after the 2.5-hour meeting. He looks at us all, he says, I've been a Republican my whole life. I donated to one Democrat, that was Buzz Westfall. But I've never given to any Democrats. I've given to Republicans my whole life because they're pro-business. And you Republicans are the ones that want to destroy my business plan. Well, I'm past the stage of recruiting supporters and trying to get more Democrats. But let's talk, we sit on budget together, about several major costs in the state. And I think you have a few of your constituents that are contractors in the contracting field. And I think that's one of the areas where back in, 2010, we toured several apprenticeships that cost the taxpayer zero. You toured those facilities. You brought the senator from Franklin. And I was glad, the senator from Franklin, because afterwards he said, thank you for bringing me and showing me what's out there. I never knew. But isn't it a surprise to see how much education is going on in the trades at no cost to the taxpayer, and how your constituents that are contractors were the ones that showed you this, not the so-called union thugs, but the contractors. Could you share some of that?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and I'm glad you brought it up because, I want to emphasize also that, when I'm listening to my constituents and when I'm going door to door and I hear this type of feedback, it's the people that are working in the trades, but it's also those contractors and small business owners that are actually, providing those jobs. And you're exactly right, Senator. I'm hearing from those business owners, we like the way this system is set up. We like the way it is. I'm not hearing, what some of our outstate colleagues may be hearing, as far as how it affects their area of the state. But as far as South St. Louis County and South City, where the first district resides, what I'm hearing from my constituents, both those that are working in the trades and those that are employing my constituents, is it's not broken. I mean, and that's what I'm hearing. And that's what I saw when you were good enough to set up that tour, and we saw that the training that the tradesmen go through and everything that's available, and that's not on the taxpayer's dime.
Not a dime of it is.
Not a dime.
Right. Not a dime. And we do spend a lot of money in job training. I hope you're not getting one of those letters, the farmer senator from Cass got when we were dealing with Senator from the 11th and I were dealing with PLAs and prevailing wage, and he got up and talked about the positive impact PLA had in the Cass County Courthouse. And he spoke for a few hours, tried to get to show it's a business plan, and he used the word it's another tool in the toolbox, and one of his colleagues gave him a note and said, you better remember what team you're on. He says, I'm on the team for my constituents.
Exactly. So, no, what this is a note from? Senator, I asked the appropriations staff to provide for me the number that we've budgeted into next year's budget as far as what we're counting on from the lottery.
You're consistent lottery.
I just got that note.
Let's talk about a few budget things. Something... We need to realize the impact it's having, but in fiscal year 2011, the total Medicaid budget for the state of Missouri was $7.6 billion. That's with a B,
right.
Billion. For fiscal year 2012, it was 8.2 billion. And then this fiscal year, with the Senate committee substitute that came out of the committee we both serve on, 8.5 billion. Now, what Medicaid provides is health care for the poor and elderly. Okay? So if you're not making money and you can't afford your own health care, who's going to pay for it?
The taxpayer.
So
to the tune of $8.5 billion.
So in just two fiscal years, that dollar amount has increased $900 million. Now, I'll use the example of my father, who's retired, that did 42 years as a construction electrician. You know how much he's costing the taxpayer right now? He gets Medicare, but he paid into Medicare. But he still gets it from the health and welfare of NECA and IBEW Local 1. He's not costing, he's not any part of that $8.5 billion, that $900 million increase. So this idea, you're costing me here, you're costing me there, you're going to pay one way or the other if that's how you're going to do it, okay? Oh, we're going to save our schools this much. You're taking away this much money from your schools when we do not provide quality jobs. Now, we can provide a state worker health care, but we don't want to provide the construction worker that works on a public works project if his contractor offers health care. Senator?
You know, Senator, another thing that I...
$8.5 billion. Wow.
Right.
Okay.
And remember, and as you know, that doesn't include some issues that are off budget also, like $1.5 billion of food stamps.
Oh, well, when you're poor, you just can't afford health care.
Right.
You can't afford food.
Right.
Okay, so let's get off this tangent that we need people to make less money so government has to subsidize them. We need to step away from that economic problem.
You know,
it just doesn't work. Supply and demand only works when there's a demand. There's only a demand when people work. And you and I both know the only way we generate revenues is through income tax and sales tax. Okay? You need to make money for government to run, then you need to spend money for government to run. What am I missing in this equation? Let's rehash, and then we'll go a little further. We're spending our time talking about an issue that's going nowhere, not dealing with educational reforms or energy policy. And oh, by the way, Medicaid's gone up $900 million in 2 years. And $1 billion is going for food stamps because there's no jobs for the poor people. And we are deficit spending. What am I missing in this equation that's good public policy, Senator?
Senator, you're right on. And also, you know, the mandated growth in those programs, remember, eats up all of our growth in revenue, if we even have any.
So you can go back to the senator from Cape Girardeau and his issue last night with the public schools. We need to fund the schools. We're not going to be able to fund it if we're funding health care and food for the poor because they have no opportunities out here. And we're spinning our wheels, spending time talking about an issue that one contractor wants to bring into this chamber. We don't want to listen to all these contractors that provide health care, provide good wages, provide a pension at no cost. And, oh, God, how did I forget this? They provide their own training, too. Senator, let's go to that real quick, okay? You know how much we're doing in job training? $9.6 million. That's not counting your community colleges. That was 2 years ago. $9.9 million fiscal year 2012. Senator, we're also spending more and more money on job training when we have these individuals creating their own job training. And then the purchase of child care services.
183
million in 2011, 184 million in 2012, 178 million in this Senate committee substitute that was voted out. Okay, when we did welfare to work, we wanted people to get off, so we have to help subsidize their child care. Okay, once again, why are we penalizing these businesses that say, don't change this law? And they pay people enough that they don't need government help for child care, they don't need government help for food, and they don't need government help because they have pensions to take care of their health care when they get old. Senator, and a lot of our colleagues aren't here to listen, maybe they're listening, what am I not getting here? I mean, is this the blind leading the blind? And oh, by the way, let's bring in the fact, I told you I'd bring it up again, let's have a special session that costs the taxpayers $200,000 where we actually do nothing. I mean, Senator, I'm frustrated. Do I look frustrated? I'm frustrated that you have so many ideas you want to put forth, you want to help bring compromise, and the Speaker of the Senate, oh, I'm sorry, the President Pro Tem of the Senate, I mean, the Speaker, they dictate. In the Senate, the Senators each dictate, right? I'm sorry I misstated that there for a second. But where are we going? This is wrong. What am I telling you that doesn't bring the facts to light?
I think you're spot on, Senator. I think that we have come to a place where we're in an impasse. This body, as I opened up this inquiry, is not the same as the body across the hall. You don't, because you have a huge majority, get to stomp your feet and have your way. You work with the 34 senators that are in this body, no matter what party they're with, and you say, what do we need to do to come to a place of reason where we can all agree and get this thing moved forward? And if you can't, then the bill waits for the next year, or the year after that, or the year after that. And it's not dictated, Senator, and here we go. I'll blackball myself with, you know, a bunch of other, you know, people on one side or the other. It's not dictated by somebody that's roaming the halls out there or somebody that is a member of Civic Progress back in St. Louis. All right? It's dictated by the people's representatives in this body. That's how the process works. And if we haven't come to a place where we are at an agreement, we might not love it. You know, everybody at the table might not be happy, but we're able to move forward. Well, then, that's a good day in the Senate, right? But if we don't, you know what, Senator? Every year that I've served down here, at the end of the year, I've gone home frustrated. I think the more years you serve, and you have more seniority, I think, than anybody else in the body.
Yeah, 48 years old, I'm the most senior person.
Right. But, you know, if you have any wisdom at all that you've acquired over the years, you understand that, well, maybe that's just the way the process is supposed to work, and you accept it. Right.
Right.
I tell a lot of the young, new freshmen that come in, especially on the House side, don't fall in love with any of your legislation because it'll drive you crazy. Right? Do the best that you can do. Move the ball down the field. I've got a number of issues that I've introduced for 6 and 7 years in a row. And, again, I think of Wilberforce his issue.
You've been helpful, but I guess in closing with my inquiry of you, I need help. Okay? You came and you flattered me that I told you we became friends in 2002 when I ran the freshman tour, and you said I was kind of your mentor. I don't know the answers anymore.
Because see how I was taught in the legislative process is, one, you bring the industry in and let them give input of what we need to do. Did that. Did it four times. Get people with ideas and bring forth. Did that. And then we'll work on something, not get dictated to, but we'll work on something. Now, if you go back in the process, I think it was the fourth week in January, I look on a Friday, there's four different labor bills out of five on the perfection calendar. I was like, well, I guess we're not working on energy policy, we're not working on schools, we're not working on tax credit reform, we're not working on Airtropolis. This is our agenda. So here's where I need help, because I don't know it all. I did everything you're supposed to do in the process. And they come up with a bill and say, we're going to force this down. Okay. Well, we talk about it a little bit. I've said, and I've been approached, what can we do? I says, I know the issue. Do mandatory reporting. See how it works. Once we're gone, there'll be new blood in here. Let them see if that works and brings those 68% of those wage rates down. And it doesn't make labor happy that I'm doing it. Nope, we're not going to do it. All I hear is we're going to average and getting rid of mode. Getting rid of mode, going to average. Going to average, getting rid of mode. That's all I hear. And then I get all these contractors telling me, would you stand up for us? Business people, stand up for us. I don't know. Can you tell me what I'm supposed to do? How a bill becomes a law? Senator, can you? Can you mentor me?
Well, let's see, Senator. If I've got any words of wisdom for you, it would be that nothing is static in this place. All the dynamics will change, and like Wilberforce, the opposition on the other side of the aisle, you know, with time, came around. Was he frustrated through the process? Certainly he was frustrated. At times, you know, he's a man that suffered from great depression because of it. But again, it's that's the process. And, you know, thank God we've got that process. Because if we didn't have the ability to grind these things out, then the locomotive of tyranny would run us over. So, are we all going to agree? Or are we going to be able to get to where we need to get to on this issue? You know, one thing that you can take to the bank, as long as this body remains the Senate and doesn't succumb to the pressure of what, again, I believe is an onslaught of term limits to become more like the House, as long as we don't change our rules or that we don't invoke a rules that we have to run over and trample over the top of other senators, then this body will work just the way it's supposed to work. And it may not always be pretty. It may not always make everybody happy. But it's exactly the way it's supposed to work.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
President.
Senator from the 13th.
I inquire the senator from Jasper.
The senator from Newton.
Senator from Newton, I'm sorry.
The senator from Newton is not on the floor. Sergeant at Arms, would you please summons the senator from Newton?
Victor.
The senator from the 13th.
To inquire the senator from Newton.
Senator from Newton?
I yield, yes.
He does yield. Proceed.
Senator, I'm not going to keep you long. I just wanted... Senator, I just
Excuse
wanted...
me.
I'm not going to keep you long. I just
That's
wanted...
okay. I got plenty of time. That's okay.
No, because you and I have a good relationship.
Well, I just... you're not going to make me mad. That's okay. Just go ahead.
Oh, no. I just wanted to talk about some of the issues, and there has been some frustrations of the prevailing wage, and you have shared those, but there's been some positive impact, too, of labor standards, and some of the contractors that your school district has had to deal with. And in the previous inquiry, the senator from Stoddard inquired of you about some of your issues, but my inquiry is of you of some of the positive things that has happened with the Division of Labor Standards and what has recently happened with a possible contractor and everything down there.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I know is what you know is...
I know, but I'm trying to share it. And if I tell your colleagues this, sure. But if they hear it from you, they might say, oh, I didn't know that transpired. So that's why I brought you down to just explain it. That's the only reason. I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
No, that's all right. I've been put on the spot by experts over the years. That's not a big deal.
Well, Senator, I am not an expert.
Real
quick, before you answer.
Apparently, the school district had a contract with somebody from a minority contractor from Alabama or Georgia, and they haven't responded to the level as the school district would have hoped, and they asked the Department of Labor to come down and intervene, and apparently that's had some success, although I think it's going to end up in a lawsuit because the contractor has not, there was some, and I don't know this to be fact or firm, that they had some undocumented workers working possibly and some labor issues. So, I mean, I just, that's what I heard. Maybe you and I talked about it, but it probably going to end up in a lawsuit, but it's dead in the water. Nothing's being moved right now.
Yeah, but what was made aware of us in one of the group meetings that we had, the head of Department of Labor, that your superintendent had contacted the department to come down, help set up shop, and try to help us, guide us to what we need to do, because as he stated, your superintendent's in the business to educate kids. That's now with the disaster that has happened, all of a sudden they're into this construction management phase two. And when you bid out public works jobs, you have to go with the lowest and best. They're just abiding by the law down in Joplin, so they go with the lowest bid, and then they have problems with this contractor from Alabama. So in the future, I'm sure that contractor's going to have problems working for the Joplin School District because of best. I guess they now have a defense for best. So
yeah,
that's what I was trying to get.
When I was at City Hall, you know, you always took the lowest and best. Sometimes it wasn't the lowest.
Right, best. But I think
this, on the lowest, they may have made a mistake because the necessary wasn't the best.
And we can't agree that the Department of Labor Standards did come down and assist or are continuing to assist with your school district.
After you made, I did check on that, and you're absolutely right. That did happen, yes.
That did happen.
That did happen, absolutely. That's what I was told by the superintendent of schools, yes. And they seemed pleased with the cooperation.
The cooperate. So there is a positive story with the Department of Labor dealing and assisting with the Joplin School District.
That's what the district told me, yes.
Okay. I didn't want to keep you too long, but I did want to bring that to light about this contractor was from Georgia.
What was your question again?
The contractor was from Georgia.
I think so. One of the,
so probably
Georgia, Alabama, wherever it was.
And probably frustrated a lot of your local contractors as well.
You know, I don't remember how many bid on that project. There's three or four, and all the rest of them were at a number that was somewhat higher than the low, but it was all within the ballpark that made you think that something was you know, it was unusual to have one really, really that low.
So
I don't know why. I think part of the discussion was there's supposed to be some salvage rights on it too, and I don't know how that affected the price. I just know what I read in the press and
right here's here I'm reading it. Your superintendent's last name is Huff.
Yeah.
In the project at Irving was completed without any environmental violations, and the cost to go to the next lowest bidder, which we don't know if it was a local bidder or not, was $500,000. So when that superintendent seen that much of a difference, they says $500,000 is a lot of money. We're going to go with this contractor from Georgia. As somebody that's been in construction, you sit and say to yourself, how can a contractor haul all their equipment up from Georgia
yeah.
and be $500,000 less than a local contractor, whether it's from Newton, Jasper, or even Oklahoma, or Kansas, or Missouri, or St. Louis, or Kansas? How can they compete? And it's dealing with the issue that you brought up, that there was insinuations that they had, and I believe the head of Department of Labor, some issues they were looking into with some illegals working on the job.
I mean, that was a conversation, and whether that's a fact, I don't know. It's speculation on my part. Say, Asher, if you're talking to somebody else, the senator from the first, on mandatory reporting, does that include if
my amendment's on your desk if you want to look at it and talk to
if
me
you,
about it.
If you did that, does that include every contractor that doesn't have a job with federal money? Does that include, is that everybody, or is it contractors that don't bid on these jobs? Does that include
them? What it basically
them?
Does is if you're going to bid on a public works project,
right.
but if you got to submit your hours.
But if you don't bid on a
and you don't want to submit, you don't have to.
So you don't, it's not mandatory for them.
Right. But say you're the former mayor, say you're doing a city hall. You look down and you tell the contractors, one of our requirements, just like abiding by the prevailing wages, is you've had to submit hours to labor to help us determine the wage rate. So that's one of those requirements to bid on the jobs to kind of entice people to submit their wage rates.
So who would you turn them in to?
Department of Labor. And the senator from Jefferson has an amendment that would do it online, because one of the meetings, the head of the Department of Labor said he wants to implement, just like they do in Maryland, an yeah. online. And then the other thing, as I talked to the senator from Phelps about, is everyone's scared to turn these hours in because there might be backlash. The head of the Department of Labor said at the one meeting we had him alone, we haven't had those complaints to go after people. Then also, with all these objections to the wage orders, in 12 years, the senator from Jefferson used the facts that there's only been like 10 objections, and they've all been resolved over 10 years, 115 counties times 22 different occupational titles. I mean, the number is enormous, that there isn't that problem. And then I was also bringing up the fact, Senator, I don't know if you're aware, but Mercy Hospital down in your area is also the Mercy Hospital in St. Louis. A lot of the contractors that they have done work with in St. Louis are coming down and doing the work. Guarantees probably got a lot of trailers down there. I know several people that I know that are working down in Joplin, and they're from Missouri. They're not from Alabama or Georgia, and they're paying taxes, and they're citizens, but they're down there working in that hospital in all the hours, because that's going to be the biggest. Am I correct in assuming that's the biggest project of all of them?
Yeah, it's going to be $800 million project.
That will set the wage rates in your area, no matter what happens, for the next 2 or 3 years, the construction wage rates at that hospital.
Yeah.
And those wage rates will be turned in, but also I have told a lot of them to visit your bowling alley. Trying to give you a little marketing, too.
Okay. Well, let me think about that a little bit.
What, letting them come to your establishment?
No, I'm still thinking about your mandatory reporting. I just want to make sure.
Senator, my amendment is on your desk. It's point 29S if you want to look at it.
Okay. I'm just looking at the policy of it. I just want to make sure that I think it through. Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 13th.
Fire the senator from Jefferson.
Senator from Jefferson, do you yield?
I do, Mr. President.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you so much, Mr. President.
You're welcome. Proceed.
Senator, first off, I do want to discuss the issue of the violations you had talked about and how much of a big issue this is. You had discussed it earlier.
Are you talking about the objections that...
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I did have a question about your amendment, though.
I don't know if I'm knocking you out. Is that your question?
No. No. Before we get to that, when are wages due to the Department of Labor?
February 1st. Maybe it's March 1st. Maybe it's March 1st.
In your Senate amendment to the substitute amendment, I don't think you have a effective date. When you...
I think that's all set currently by rule.
Well, in the Senator from the 11th Amendment, you struck out Section 2 on page 2, which had the effective date, and then you struck out Section 2 on line 25, the effective date. And I don't even know if that effective date would work because some hours would have already been submitted, some haven't, and it would have precluded contractors from even bidding on jobs if they hadn't submitted hours. Following what I'm saying?
No, you got a valid point. I'm looking for the Senator from 11th Amendment. I got it here. You know you're sane when you have a mess on your desk.
Yeah.
Oh, they brought it to me. The reason I didn't have it, I still had my Joplin News report file out. That's not the file it's in. It's underneath it, so I just found it.
That's you talking yourself through what you were doing at that point?
Yes. Once you have children, you are going to learn something.
I do have to get,
I know. But when they get older, the only time anyone listens to you is when you talk to yourself, because... sometimes the spouse and children don't listen, so you tend to talk to yourself at times. Okay, I have it.
My son's two. He doesn't listen. Okay, so on page 2 in the first section of the bill, line 7, he had an effective date of January 2014, and again on line 25. Although if this bill would become law August 28th, you would, in essence, lock anybody out from bidding on jobs that had never submitted wages. Am I reading that wrong? Maybe research could help us out there. But
yeah, no, you're reading it right, because I am striking the lines. What I was intending to do, if research is listening to me,
But before they do that, I don't even know if that works. Because the annual wage order is due in, what did you say, March 1st?
Yes. Yes.
So you would basically be locking anybody out from March 1st till January 1st, 2014, if they had not submitted any hours to the division.
All right, here's what I want research, why I'm inquiring the senator from Jefferson to look into. But... the survey that I want, language that I had in my original amendment, the senator from the 11th changed the reporting. I wanted this to be my new language in my original amendment, but I wanted to make sure it was included in his
right, substitute. Right, so all you would have needed to do at the end of your Senate amendment to the substitute amendment would have an effective date at the end.
But that may not work, because if wages are due March 1st and they set the annual wage order, is it in June?
You'll have a...
June 1st.
You'll have between June 1st to January 1st of 2014, of anybody that had not submitted a wage under your amendment would be locked out from bidding on any public projects. I don't know if I'm saying that clearly enough. If your amendment says that you cannot bid on any public projects unless you submitted wages, and that time has already passed, you're locking out anybody, any contractor that had not submitted wages from bidding on any public projects.
No, I
between June 1st and January 1st, 2014.
I think you have a point. I have the inquiry correct, Mr. President.
Senator from the 13th.
To inquire the senator from the 11th.
Senator from the 11th.
Yes, Mr. President.
Do you yield to an inquiry to the senator from the 13th?
Mr. President, do I understand that it is the senator from the 13th seeking an inquiry of me?
You understand that correctly.
Thank you, Mr. President. I do yield.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, the senator from Jefferson has brought up a very valid point, and I want to correct it, and I think the best way to correct what I want to do would be to withdraw my amendment. That way it would be your amendment that would be pending while I go work it with research on that to make sure that I have the effective date.
There. Okay. So we'll be back on my amendment?
Yes.
And, okay, that's whatever you want to do. So what's the problem?
I'm looking at yours and I'm looking at mine. So that I'm for sure, you're 0.19S.
Yes.
Okay. You are doing required reporting with yours.
Yes.
I'm reading it right now.
Well, Senator, what I can do is, if you withdraw your amendment, I have another.
An amendment to put on to your amendment?
Yes.
I don't think.
That what I did is, if you remember earlier today, if I can just find my notes, the amendment that I have, the second, is, let's see, where did they put that? Oh, here we go. I noticed a problem on my amendment, which is I have an amendment. If you remember, you got the floor earlier today. This was hours ago. That removes the brackets on locality because it occurs to me if we establish mandatory reporting, that bracket of locality is not necessary. So I have an amendment that goes that removes the brackets that change the definition of locality. Do you see that part of the bill?
What line are you on?
It would be page 1, line 1.
I don't have a line 1 on page 1.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I misspoke. It's about my. I'm referring to my amendment. I'm sorry. So let me just find my amendment here. So the what I was talking about, line 1, was just that. But let me see here. Just a second. Let me get this stuff together. It's funny how
I know
the stuff
feeling.
gets disoriented the moment you. Okay, we're back on. In the base bill, he has a reference to. If I could get my staff to hand me the base bill, that would be great. I think I was. It's lost somewhere. The doorman could get me that. That would be, I'll take you to where I'm willing to go. Okay. The brackets, he, The amendment that we're on, keep in mind, my amendment to the amendment modifies the mine will modify the substitute amendment for your underlying Senate amendment.
Right.
So on line one of that, that's the there's a reference to locality in his base bill. And let me go to that bill, which is on page 2. And if you see on page 2, line 20, do you see how, I don't know if you saw on the base bill on page 2, the brackets, he brackets all the stuff that begin on line 20, to workmen engaged in similar character and all that. Well, the base bill brackets that. And then on line 43, after the bracket ends, the prevailing hourly wages of each locality. So I believe in the Senate amendment to my amendment, I did not deal with the locality issue. So as an amendment to my substitute amendment, I'm going to deal with the locality issue. And there's a three-dimensional chart that fully goes into what I just explained.
Okay, your amendment, your substitute to my amendment is 9.19S is the same as 0.08 of your original amendment you were going to try.
Right, and the amendment to the amendment removes the brackets that change the definition of locality.
All right, why don't I let you work with that amendment while I go to the research table and work on mine. Is that fine with you?
That is fine with me, but you have to remove, you have a pending
yes.
amendment, correct?
Yes.
And you have the floor.
Yes.
All right.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 13th.
Can I withdraw my amendment?
Send the amendment back.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 11th.
I have a Senate amendment to my substitute amendment. I would ask that be, or I'm going to send it forward. It is not, I would ask that it will be distributed. So I would ask for unanimous consent to waive the reading. It can be distributed. I will not close on it, Mr. President, until it is distributed.
Seeing no objection, the reading will be waived. Send the amendment forward.
Mr. President.
And we will not close until sure. the.
I would move for the adoption of the amendment. This is a Senate amendment to the substitute amendment. And if you've watched the movie Matrix, there is, Mr. President, a full 3D version of what I'm doing to the bill, and with this withdrawing of the substitute amendment and the amendment, which, if you heard my inquiry of the Senator from 13, actually at some point even confused me. Did you notice that infraction of the rules, Mr. President? Anyway,
proceed.
Mr. President, I would move for the adoption of the Senate amendment to the substitute amendment. As I indicated, Mr. President, in the base bill, if you take the substitute amendment, the substitute amendment that I have for the Senator from 13th Amendment begins on page 2, line 20. And you will notice, Mr. President, in the base bill on line 20, the Senator from Stoddard removes lines 20 and brackets out through line 43. My substitute amendment begins on pages 2 and 3, lines 43 through 54, by striking that. And finally, the amendment to the amendment that I am offering now removes the brackets. The brackets refer to the prevailing hourly wages of each locality. Mr. President, I would ask at this point, I would move for the adoption of the amendment to the substitute amendment, and I would ask to inquire of the senator from Jefferson.
The senator from the 11th moves the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1 to the Senate substitute for Amendment Number 1 for Senate Amendment Number 1. Senator from Jefferson, do you yield?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
I am utterly confused now.
Well, that was part of the plan, but anyway. Let's go to the bill. Okay, and then you have my substitute amendment.
So the senator from the 13th withdrew his
amendment
one
to my
substitute
amendment.
We went back to your substitute amendment. Then did you withdraw that substitute amendment?
No.
So this is actually an amendment to your substitute?
Correct. And the purpose that I noticed earlier today is that my amendment, there was a need for the amendment to the substitute amendment because it retained the senator from Stoddard's ill-conceived definition of locality. And that was no longer, if the amendment was adopted, that would be an unnecessary. So it was a straggler that needed to be dealt with, so I dealt with it by my substitute amendment. Senator, before we get back into all the amendment, I've heard a lot of discussion about this, that, and the other. I want to really return the body to, we have a bill in front of us in Senate Bill 439 that is not reflective of any of the negotiations that we've had with the interested party. Now, I've talked to a lot of colleagues today during session and everything, and as you well know, we are just merely politicians here. Earlier today, we dealt with a complicated issue of who can, provide between CRNs and anesthesiologists. We are required in this job to go to a level of complexity that sometimes is beyond our belief. So in that circumstance, we have to rely on people to an extent. Now, we can't let special interests write legislation. That probably happens too much anyway. But the check on that is that there's often competing interests
right.
in this. To have to elevate prevailing wage, to elevate the construction industry, which is merely one component of the Missouri economy, granted an important component, but to elevate all of that and to have all the other issues such as job training, how we pursue construction, how local governments pursue that. In that mix is also undocumented workers and problems associated with that. And to go into this extent, and when we have these meetings that discuss with everyone, all of these different components, and you at that point need people who do this every day. So to the credit of the senator from Stoddard, he had these meetings, okay? And in these meetings, he organized, there were people who were union contractors, there were organizations that had union and non-union contractors, and there were some contractor groups that were smaller that didn't like prevailing wage, that didn't like whatever, that said that. Now, whether it's telecommunications, and I said this earlier today on the floor, whether it's anything that's complicated, to suddenly arrive upon a sector of the economy deciding, well, we're going to do away with the mode method, and we're going to do all this, and we're going to suspend this for the disaster areas, and we're going to do all that, that's going to have a major effect on the construction industry. And right. and the point is...
On an industry that's already struggling.
I mean, I can't stress enough, we don't know really enough about this because part of it is you have to listen to contractors, you have to take with a grain of salt, okay, there's an element of bias, are they truly subjective? But we've been in that room. And there was, it would have been different if we had seen Senate Bill 439 come out as we have in the past as reflective of those meetings. Let me tell you, when I first came to the Senate, this is before the senator from 13th was here, I came here in 2004. That was the early days of prevailing wage. There were bills that outright repealed prevailing wage. There were bills that at that time...
Eliminated for school projects.
Senator John Loudon was famous for doing away with PLAs. There was that issue percolating. All of those issues. The former senator from Franklin, who was well known for this,
yeah.
said, look, we don't know enough about this. Let's have a task force that looks at, over the summer, a joint interim committee that looks at all of this, that has the school districts, that has local governments, that has people from big cities but little cities, people from big school districts and little school districts, people who are in the organized construction industry, people who are in the non-organized construction industry. Now, what that framework led to was that ultimately we came to an agreement 2 years later. It could have been a year earlier. Actually, we came to an agreement in the Senate after only one session. The holdup was the House at the time. Okay, that's how we approached this. Now, we went through that complicated
Interestingly
process.
Interestingly enough, I have an amendment that I haven't distributed that does exactly that.
I think that I wanted to give you some history because you weren't here for part of it. Actually, even the senator from 13th was not in the Senate, but he was involved in some of that.
Right.
The school district showed up. They said their objection. They said blah, blah, blah. And guess what came up even in those early days? The same issue that we find ourselves 8 years later grappling with, reporting, a failure to report, the problem in a county where it doesn't have wages. Okay,
right.
We grappled with that back then. Some in the industry said the same thing that they did today. Why don't we have mandatory reporting? Why don't we do this? A lot of the industry, like the people I invited to these meetings, who are employers, who are members of the Republican Party, who are members of the Chamber of Commerce, who provide health care to their employees, who provide pensions, who provide job training, who say, I just want the government, as a good rock-ribbed Republican, to leave me alone. And I brought some of those people to that room
right.
that we just had. They were there, too, and they just said, look, we don't want anything special, but we just don't want to be undercut. We want an even playing field, okay? And there's a reason why we have all these things, which is that we don't want to compete with the contractor who their solution to health care is the public system called Medicaid. We don't want to compete with the contractor who hires undocumented workers. We don't want to compete with the contractor because that's not fair. That's not American value. That's not Missouri values. And guess what? That goes on a lot. With all due respect to religious sects, they have a role in the economy. They have a role in society as part of their religion. Should they build a major stadium somewhere? No. No. Should they build a school somewhere? Probably not. Probably not. And we've had that problem. And there's a balance there.
Right.
And what I have said from the beginning is, after going through that process and being here for all of it, this year, this sudden urgency that we have to do something on prevailing wage, there's no Supreme Court decision out there.
I sense is
there... There's no change that has dramatically caused some crisis. There's not even like in workers' comp where there's, you know, a bunch of decisions. There's a couple of circuit court decisions that actually somewhat contradict themselves. And I know you have some of that information. And it's across the spectrum of a whole bunch of issues that while they might deal with construction, they're not directly dealing with one particular thing. Some of them deal with maintenance. Well, guess what? The maintenance issue on prevailing wage has been a level of dispute that has gone on for three decades. Despite the magical powers of this legislature, it will go on for another three decades. So I want the body to understand we don't have some situation here where some crisis has created a need to suddenly do something. I have asked and urged everybody from the beginning, since we don't have never built a building, why don't we listen to the people who have to do that? And why don't we walk carefully through those steps? Okay, we start to do that.
I mean,
we start to do that. The last time, by the way,
we had and we've said this over and over, are not reflected in the legislation in front of us. You know, the court case you talked about was the water tower, and that's maybe addressed in the first, you know, in 29210 lines 3 through 5. That's the only court case out there, and all they do is change a few words. The rest of this stuff that your amendment is dealing with, we didn't discuss that in any of those meetings. We talked in general, in broad terms, about prevailing wage and whether it works or not. We didn't talk about just disaster areas. And I said before, on the last page, it eliminates prevailing wage in any area that was a disaster area. I live right on the Mississippi River. Crystal City is, you know, a stone's throw from the Mississippi. We've had both flooding and tornadoes in the last couple years. We would have been a disaster area. It's, to me, it's frustrating. My sense is that there are not a whole lot of people that really want to change to this.
Right.
My sense is there's just a few. And I really sincerely believe that you and the senator from Phelps and the senator from 13th, and myself, and Senator from Jasper?
Yeah. No, Newton.
Newton. I think, you know, we could get together and try to find some type of common ground, but, you know, this isn't even close. Mandatory reporting gets us closer.
The problem is it's so ham-handed, too, because...
But then it takes me back
to... But the senator from the 13th...
But then it takes me back to 61 objections in 10 years where only 12 had to be ruled on.
Well, it takes me back to we're messing with something that has been in law, in the system of construction. Maybe it does need change, but we're doing it in the context of you guys have got to agree to something to allow us to change this. Even though, by the way, the Missouri House, and I'm very curious to hear somebody's assessment of what the House will do with whatever work product we come with out of here, because I believe that, and I haven't asked the senator from Stoddard this, I am very curious where the speaker and other people in that body, in leadership, who were at some of the meetings, and by the way, did not have the same level of priority or urgency attached
to
this issue.
Well, if you notice, they walked out after a few minutes.
They have not been back, and I don't know if they've been invited back. I don't know if it was disinterest. I don't know if they just... And I guess what I'm saying is... Here's what I'm saying.
Well,
No, anyway...
Here's what I'm saying.
They mock me. They mock me. Look.
Here's what I'm saying.
Here's how you make a bill.
We're on the Senate bill with 2.5 weeks
left. You have been at meetings where I always say this, and I say, okay, clearly I'm not too worried about Senate bill 439, even if somebody gets goofy around here and circulates some procedural document.
Yeah.
Now, back 2 months ago, when all these bills were lined up and they were the only thing on the calendar, I just said, let's have at it.
Yeah.
And by the way, I will be happy if you walk down this...
Have a good weekend, but pack your lunch.
If we take the road to Nutville... Let me know, because
you're leading the train.
I'm happy, and I can start circulating that document, and we can talk about nuclear power plants, and we can talk about everything else, and we can bring back Airtropolis, and everybody can be happy. But I think it would be largely dysfunctional. And by the way, what I would hate to do to this body, and I hope people think this way, is I would hate to have all of the power in this building shift to the Missouri House and to the governor. And that's what happens once you start cleaning things up, making sure that these things have gone on too long.
That's why I appreciated so much the comments from the senator from the first and what his feelings are about this chamber. And that's what, you know, I've told you before, I spent 6 years over there. I couldn't wait to get over here, because this is the way I think
You just didn't know it had changed.
Well, but yeah, my first session over here, we were PQ'd four times, and I thought, what happened?
Yeah,
I'm back in the house.
It had sort of changed from the old days, you know. And I remember when I was in local government, and I've told the senator from 13th this many times, I didn't have too much, I wasn't a Jeff City person, but I was in local government. And I remember at the time, we'd always hire some political hack as our lobbyist, right? You know, because that's the county, and, you know, it's sort of like a Louisiana parish back in Jackson County, and we'd always hire some, you know, oh, well, this guy needs something, so send him down to Jeff City. And so maybe he'll wander around. And so our bill always had an identical but sometimes different trajectory. It always appeared to me that our bill passed the Senate but died in the House. And then some years we had a variation, it passed the House but died in the Senate. But typically, the only reference that I knew from some of the individuals that I only ancillarily knew who served in this body was that it died in the Senate. And I kept, as a person in local government where you don't have the filibuster, kept going, what do you mean died in the Senate? What do you mean it, da 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 da? And so that was my only knowledge of it. My other knowledge that I had of it was, you know, I handled Ronnie DePasco's campaign when he ran in 1992, or that was 92. And I just came down here a couple of times, but I liked it, but I just, you know, as a campaign guy, it was kind of, I'd been in local government, but as a campaign guy, it was kind of difficult to come down here because you help elect somebody, and then you come down here in January and February, and there's all these other people who were not around for the campaign, but all of a sudden, they're advising the person that you helped elect. Right. And you're like going, I don't remember any of these people working polls or whatever. And it was always a source of frustration that I had in the past coming down here.
I remember.
But I guess this body was always seen as, to me, was this sort of mystical place where things died.
Right.
But then you got here and you saw kind of the subtlety that things died for a reason. It sometimes was not entirely mean. It was by a mutual respect that they had for each other. The senator from 13th told me, interestingly enough, about prevailing wage. Bills that he would pass as a committee chair or would come sailing out of the House would come over here. And keep in mind, our party was in control numerically. And they would always say, well, they would always tell the senator from 13th, I think he's fond of saying this, well, your bill's dead because it messes with prevailing wage, and we can't do that to Senator such and such.
Right.
And you'd look around and you go, well, Senator such and such is like 74 years old. And you think, is he fully capable of stopping something all night?
Danny's staple.
I guess what I'm saying is the old Senate typically would not require, had such a mutual respect, and not everybody jumped up all the time, that they would be required to stand up like we are tonight.
What would happen a lot then, too? Danny Staples carried a bill to allow pari-mutuel betting in Missouri. I guess we can have horse races for 30 days or something in statute. But the kicker is that we're not allowed to have pari-mutuel betting. That's why nobody ever wants to build here, and that's why it doesn't make any money. So he sponsored this bill year after year after year. So a guy named Wayne Crump was carrying that in the House, and Wayne got it passed through the House. It was over in the Senate. They had the votes. It was finally going to pass after Danny carrying this for 15 years. Wayne Crump didn't pass one of Danny's other bills. That was a consent-type bill. So Danny Staples kills his own bill that he's been working on for 15 years. And it's never got that close to passing again. Couldn't imagine seeing that today. But you know what that did? If you can kill your most important bill, he was a feared man over in the House.
Sure. Yeah, and I guess, look, those, you know,
I think Ken's the only one, the political culture, as far as the doorman. You know, my dad gave the doormen their coats. They used to all wear separate suits.
The political culture has changed. So I didn't hear that part, but anyway.
No, all the doormen used to wear their own suits like we do every day, and my dad instituted a rule that they would all wear, back then, red sport coats. And
red sport coats.
They've been wearing the sport coats ever since, and I think
Did you say red sport coats?
Yeah.
Was the senator
actually,
from?
They were more maroon.
Oh my!
They were more. No, they were maroon. I'm sorry.
He came in to haunt us even back then. Where'd they go? The center from Johnson's store to get those?
They were maroon.
Yeah.
More than red. I think former Senator Gibbons changed them to blue.
It's been blue the whole time I've been here.
Yeah.
Back to the process. Okay, so we get done with all this stuff on prevailing wage.
Right.
Okay. There's an agreement. Look, outside anything major happening, if we do approach prevailing wage, we're all going to get together again, meaning the entire industry and all that. Now, this year, Senator from 23rd, who wasn't part of all that, you know, I told him last year, I said, look, this is what happened, and they have caucus members that want to get something done on prevailing wage. And I stressed to them, the only way to do that is we don't build buildings. We don't know anything about this. We can guess. We can have one special interest on one thing. But the best thing is to get them in the room. Now, as a senator from 13th did, to be fair, I didn't want a union in the room because a union only provides labor. They're not per se in the business of making a payroll, da-da-da. They help in that process. They certainly contribute in the job training. But they're a provider of labor. They're a provider of service to employers. Also, I was cognizant of, let's look at this from a business perspective. So who did I invite? Republican businessmen who are in the business of building buildings.
Right.
And what did they say? Walk very carefully into all of this. Senate Bill 439 is not reflective of any of that. We need to walk very carefully with what we do, because what might seem like a benefit to rural Missouri will be a detriment to the suburbs and to urban that. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, we've dealt with...
It could be a detriment to rural Missouri, too.
I believe so as well, because here's my point. The senator from Lewis 2 weeks ago had an amendment on an education bill that what? Restored minimum teacher salaries. Because the reality, Senator, is if that was left to the property tax and just that function without the state intervention, school teachers would make $6,000 a year in some counties, or maybe not even that. Medicaid, all of those things, and all of the part of us being donor counties are all true. Now, I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with that because that's part of being a state.
Right.
But
I don't know if you – did you take any of those trips?
What's that?
Former Senator Griesheimer, when we had that task force to get minimum salary.
I actually wasn't in the early days of it. I was yet to be in the Senate. I was about to come in the Senate. But I came to a couple of the meetings that he was on. Then that provided a framework of them, look, saying, you know, the whole argument. Now, by the way, that was motivated by a small group in the construction industry who, by the way, is the same group of people on this. And I have a sense that on prevailing wage, there's a tendency by this interest group to want to chip away constantly and pick away and chip, chip, chip. And 5 years ago, by the way, last year, their lobbyist and the individual involved, I reminded them of being in Mike Gibbons' office and having us all, including the senator from Stoddard, say, we don't want to deal with this issue as long as all of us are here outside some Supreme Court or major horrific event.
They forgot.
Right.
Right.
And
they don't remember making that deal is what I...
Well, and look, I could have jumped up and down, but I thought, okay, if you really want to have good faith negotiations, I was somewhat encouraged at some of these negotiations. And I would like to remind to the body, even the senator from Phelps, when he inquired of the senator from 13th, the last meeting, we didn't end and throw up our hands.
Right.
I did remind that I wanted senators only. I didn't want the discussion to be guided to what a staff member said, well, we're here to talk about the mode method, and I reminded everybody at the meeting, well, let's wait because the contractors don't remember that. They seem to remember saying the opposite of that.
Right.
So I didn't want that to be guided in any way. I wanted us to have a very honest discussion. I'm happy to continue to have an honest discussion, but let's get beyond all that. We're supposed to let some change to prevailing wage, I guess, just to let some steam out of this place or something, so the speaker over there can keep it in his desk drawer, 4 weeks left, or even if it gets out of the House, from our perspective, yeah. Should we really let something out dealing with prevailing wage? Let's look at it from the opposite side. What do they add to it? And if people aren't going to abide by an agreement they made in 2007 and they said, well, if the House changes it, we won't take it up. Look, I'm gone from this place in 18 days. I fully expect the last week, I'm not going to be much of a consideration as far as maybe some commitments and agreements. I've been in way too many county courthouses in my life, and I'll just tell you, when you're term limited, that last month and 2 weeks or that last couple of days, not many people honor their deals. So right. From our perspective right now, we're supposed to let this out.
You know, you could always run for the House.
I could. Yeah, I'm not going to make it over there. But no, so
you imagine that.
Look at it from our, well, I'll wait a decade anyway.
You'll
wait.
Be like 15 minutes? That was quick.
I'll wait a decade and things will change again, you know, like they always seem to do. But so look at it from our perspective, both perspectives. We let this out. This is awful. Most of the employers who are involved in this industry, the major contractors, and I'm talking about people like J.E. Dunn and contractor associations and all of this who have union and non-union are all saying, please don't do this. And you and I are supposed to sit down and let this out to let some political steam out of the chamber to send over to the House. Now, you were at those meetings. I didn't hear the speaker say, this is my priority. I want this bill now. When we get messages from the House each day, does the speaker send us a message saying, where's my prevailing wage bill? I have a feeling
ask the president? I don't know.
No, I mean, the opposite, I think, is the case where he probably, when he gets it, says, why did you send this prevailing wage bill?
I have 2.5 weeks. You want me to refer this to a committee now? Yeah.
Well, they could get it done quick over there, but look.
Right.
What's this about? I try to tell very colleagues I have a lot of respect for, the senator from Newton, you know, the senator from Christian, the senator from Phelps, I get the objection. We probably don't fully understand what's happening. We can't really just listen. I don't want you to listen entirely to my sector of this argument, but I don't want to certainly listen to your sector of the argument because, you know, they certainly lean a side that I don't agree with. And so in the middle of all this is, yeah, I agree with the senator from Phelps. I want to create jobs, but I'll tell you what I don't want to do is I don't want to turn a $22 an hour job into a $7 an hour job or an $8 an hour job or, by the way, a job that goes to an undocumented worker. Now, I heard some of my colleagues, and this is water off a duck's back, laughing it up at the information I provided. Look,
I hope that's not the case.
Maybe that's some people's way of dealing with it. But I have a good sense of humor, so I can laugh about a whole variety of things. But at the core of this is a very serious issue.
Right.
We talk about tax credits all the time. I wanted the body before I left here to see, hey, if you think that you are listen to the senator from Howe and the senator from Cape. Now, they probably are against prevailing wage, but also look what happens with your tax dollars. When these guys show up in their tassel loafers and say, we're creating jobs in Missouri, I want this body to see in downtown Kansas City on some historic and low-income housing projects what actually happens. Now, that happens in the status quo, and we have prevailing wage, and we have all that sort of stuff. I just don't want to make it easier on that sector of the economy. And I have a feeling that if we remove all this, and by the way, next week we'll be dealing with the second injury fund, and we'll be dealing with workers' comp. And guess what that's related to? Whether companies pay for workers' comp.
Right.
Now, how many people in those photos, I guess the good news is they probably don't have a comp claim. Maybe they do. I don't know what we do with an undocumented worker in the comp system. But regardless of that, let's get back to the guy I invited to the meeting. Why do I have to come down here when I do all the right things? This is the way I was raised. I know, like, the senator from 11th who invited me, I'm not down here because the guy fights with the unions half the time.
Right.
Imagine how irritating they are. They irritate us.
Right.
As you know, out on the steps out there, I was saying, look, I'm not up because of any business manager. I'm up here because of the rank and file and all the people that I know that came and do that. So that's, don't understate that while this is a fight between special interests, I know too many people back home that this changed their lives. And absent some of these things, their life would have been different. To me, that's worth fighting for. That really is.
Me too.
And that's why I've spent 8 years of my life on this obscure issue, which I have also tried to tell people, try to go back home and explain what prevailing wage is to either side of the equation. And by the way, I've also seen the epiphany as the senator from 13th in his inquiry of the senator from Newton of these school districts. I've seen superintendents come down, the independent school superintendent. Independent school district a few years ago had the prevailing wage record probably similar to the state of Arkansas. Okay? But they realized over time, look, it's responsible. We want patrons to make $28 an hour. They became aware of what they were doing. They go, we don't want these people to be on the Medicaid system. We don't want them to get their job
training
because that doesn't help
us
as a district and that doesn't help us as a community.
What's strange here, I've got seven school districts in my Senate district. This is never, that is never an issue.
At one of the meetings,
I've never had one superintendent come up to me and say, prevailing wage law is limiting us from building another school. It's maybe it's because I live in a different area of the state than others, but it would seem like superintendents are like-minded people, and superintendents in my area would raise this as an issue, but you know, I've been here since 1999. I've never had that discussion with one superintendent in my area.
Well, and I always like to use the smaller example. We've all had to do a home improvement, right? And I had a neighbor that had a bathroom. And, you know, they asked for your advice, and I go,
do you not have a bathroom?
Oh, he was doing a redo, and I was like, no, I mean, he didn't have like a shed in the back or something. He had a bathroom. And he was like, and that's always a big deal, and it's always much more complicated, and I just knew that from just not personal experience, but from things I'd heard.
And you told him to be careful.
Right. Well, he, of course, did the cheap thing.
Right.
Which was he had a friend that could do it if he just paid him $10 an hour. And so he didn't get a licensed plumber. He didn't get any of that other stuff. And guess what?
It took him 3 weeks.
It cost him $9,000 to do a bathroom. And if he'd done it the other way, it probably would have, and he even admitted, it probably would have been, okay, so what I mean is intuitively it sounds like,
right,
oh, well, if I pay somebody $10 an hour, it's got to be cheaper than doing it the right way. Well, it doesn't work that way. And people have decried UMKC's study on that established that a
right.
mile of prevailing wage highway is cheaper than a mile of non-prevailing wage highway.
School
that,
construction.
That's fine that they say all
now,
that stuff.
Now, people all have different type of studies, but, you know, maybe this is factual. Secondary school construction in Missouri is $13.35 per square foot cheaper in Missouri than any of the non-prevailing wage states.
What? That, okay.
And when I hear the claims that this is going to save 30%,
right,
we eliminate prevailing wage, and construction costs are about 15 to 20 to 25% of the entire project, that, you know,
Senator, we're from Missouri.
Math,
show
that
me.
Doesn't add up.
Okay, I heard all these people decry and dismiss keep in mind, UMKC did a study years ago that had a highway statistic that they did comparing other states. This one deals with school construction. Okay, it challenges the
theory.
The theory held by others. Okay, my point is, where's their study? They don't like this study. They don't have anything. Okay, so then, absent a study, are we just supposed to go off of what they believe? What's the basis for it? I mean, the right to work thing. Read about Texas's budget. Read about Kansas's budget. It makes some of these states' budgets that are supposed to be so successful because they were right to work. Look at their budget, Senator. Look at their, they're going through worse than we are. We're going through a picnic compared to what some of these budget challenges are.
Three senators on the floor. Senator from Stoddard for
Would
a purpose.
Would you place this bill on the informal calendar?
The bill shall be placed on the informal calendar. Senator from the 23rd.
Without objection, Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Announcements. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
You have heard the motion from the Senator from the 23rd. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye. All those opposed, please say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. We are adjourned under the rules.